The COVID-19 crisis in India continues with record numbers of infections.
Hospitals are desperately short of oxygen, and India's government faces renewed calls to impose a national lockdown.
I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro.
And I'm Scott Simon, and this is Up First from NPR News.
In the U.S., the economy is coming back to life as more restaurants, bars, and theaters open back up, but not everyone benefits.
This week's jobs report was weaker than expected, but President Biden says he's optimistic.
We knew this wouldn't be a sprint, it'd be a marathon. Quite frankly, we're moving more rapidly than I thought we would.
Plus, the FDA could soon clear Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for kids 12 and up.
So please stay with us. We've got the news you need to start your weekend.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo explains the importance of creating a safe space for therapy.
I can't tell you how many times I've had clients that say that expression, like, I've never told that to anybody. That's when I know I've made some kind of momentous move with this person. They feel safe enough to expose that part of themselves, and doing that together with somebody else can be very powerful.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/upfirst.
The COVID-19 outbreak in India shows no signs of letting up.
Today, the government confirmed more than 400,000 new infections and nearly 4,200 deaths, another record. And the real numbers may be even higher.
NPR's Lauren Freer joins us now from Mumbai. Lauren, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Scott.
We've been watching the situation in India deteriorate for some weeks now. Any sign things may be improving?
Not really. Unfortunately, the past 24 hours have been the deadliest here since the pandemic began. But the truth is that we actually don't know the real picture because testing has slowed. Crematoriums are overwhelmed. Funeral workers say only a fraction of the bodies that they see daily are getting counted by the government. And it's the same with hospitals. You know, we're weeks into this wave and hospitals are still overwhelmed. We're seeing shortages of beds, medical oxygen, antiviral drugs. I mean, pretty much everything you need to treat and help people.
And why hasn't the federal government put a national lockdown into place?
Well, local lockdowns are in place, and the southern states of Tamil Nadu and Karnataka are actually the latest to lock down. But India's economy shrank 24% last spring under a national lockdown. So Prime Minister Narendra Modi doesn't want to repeat that. He is under pressure, though. The Lancet Medical Journal has an article out today calling Modi's response inexcusable, saying Modi's government is, quote, responsible for presiding over a self-inflicted national catastrophe.
That's a very grave charge. Has Prime Minister Modi or his government responded?
Modi is kind of gone AWOL, actually. He last addressed the nation on television more than 2.5 weeks ago. I have contacted 7 spokespeople for Modi's party or government in the past few days. Nobody has been available for an interview. Actually, a lot of them are sick themselves. The president of Modi's party, JP Nadda, did hold a press conference a few days ago about another topic, actually, state elections. But as you can imagine, he was asked about COVID, and here's what he had to say.
We are fighting it. Prime Minister Modi is taking meetings, discussing, taking very proactive steps.
So the message from Modi's party is the prime minister is on top of this. And he's actually holding meetings, including one with a virtual meeting with EU leaders today.
What about the vaccination effort? Is it in any way helping to slow the spread of the virus?
A week ago, the government opened up eligibility to everyone over the age of 18. But frankly, it was more of a PR stunt. At least that's what it looked like, because there just aren't enough doses to go around. India's, actually the world's biggest vaccine maker, the Serum Institute of India, has been having production problems. Its CEO hopped a private jet to the United Kingdom amid all of this. He's mired in disagreements with the government of India. And so the lesson here just may be about countries putting all their eggs in one basket. When it comes to vaccine production, India relied on basically one company for the vast majority of its supply. And now, you know, everyone I know has had their vaccination appointments canceled. Only around 2% of people in India have received 2 doses of the vaccine.
NPR's Lauren Freer in Mumbai. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
This week's jobs report was expected to be a blockbuster, but it turned out to be kind of a dud.
Employers added just 266,000 jobs last month. That's far fewer than the month before. And the U.S. economy is still more than 8 million jobs shy of where it was before the pandemic. At the White House, President Biden tried to offer some perspective.
Look, we came to office, we knew we were facing a once-in-a-century pandemic and a once-in-a-generation economic crisis. And we knew this wouldn't be a sprint, it'd be a marathon. Quite frankly, we're moving more rapidly than I thought we would.
The health picture has improved considerably since Biden took office, and that's allowing many Americans to spend more freely, dining out, planning vacations. But the jobs recovery is moving more slowly. And that's why we bring in NPR Chief Economics Correspondent Scott Horsley to tell us more. Hello.
Good morning, Lulu.
Scott, where did employers come up short last month, and how worried should we be about that?
It's hard to know if this is a one-month blip or a more lasting slowdown. We saw some job cuts in industries that have been doing well, like factories, for example. We know that car makers have had to idle workers because they can't get the computer chips they need. Grocery stores and delivery services, which thrived when we were all cooking at home and ordering online, cut jobs last month. But bars and restaurants actually had a pretty good month. They added 187,000 jobs. I talked to Katie Button, who runs a restaurant called Curate in Asheville, North Carolina. She says she's booked solid with customers. You might be able to get a table at 4:30 in the afternoon or 10 at night. But Button told me she's actually scaling back her operating hours because she says it's really hard to find workers.
I mean, when I look on the job site, there isn't a single business in Asheville that isn't hiring right now. You know, it's more about the competition among everybody that's creating this issue, right? You can't expect job placement of millions of people to happen overnight.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says she thinks the jobs recovery will continue, but she warned there might be some bumps along the way.
That's really interesting what she said there. Is there really a shortage of workers, even though millions of people are still unemployed?
There are some signs of a lot of demand for labor. People who have jobs generally worked longer hours last month. There were fewer people working part-time who want to work full-time. Of course, the real telltale sign of a labor shortage would be rising wages, and there's not a lot of evidence of that. But White House economist Cecilia Rouse says some employers are actually starting to pay more to get workers.
We do see some increase in wages, and that is, I think, to be expected. We're coming out of a very deep recession, and it's an unusual recession. It was caused by a virus, and so it impacted not only the demand for workers, but it's had a profound impact on labor supply.
By labor supply, she means some people are justifiably worried about taking a job where they could be exposed to the virus. Others are still busy looking after children since a lot of schools have not yet reopened. And that's especially true of women. Women actually dropped out of the workforce last month, even as hundreds of thousands of men started looking for work.
So what's the outlook for jobs going forward?
Well, if the pandemic picture continues to improve, we should see more hiring. As schools reopen, that should make it easier for parents to go back to work. Another factor is supplemental unemployment benefits are due to run out at the end of the summer. Some employers think that will force more people to start looking for work. And a couple of states, Montana and South Carolina, plan to cut those benefits off early.
That's NPR's Scott Horsley. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
More young people in the United States may soon be able to get COVID-19 shots. The Food and Drug Administration is expected to authorize the Pfizer vaccine for use in children as young as 12.
That decision is based on trials that show it's safe and effective, and it may be announced within days. Here to tell us more is NPR's Ping Huang. Hello.
Hi, Lulu.
Okay, currently COVID-19 vaccinations in the U.S. are open to everyone 16 and older. What do we now know about vaccines for younger kids?
Well, Pfizer, the drug company, released data at the end of March, and it showed that their vaccine works in children ages 12 to 15 and that the side effects are generally not that bad. They had around 2,200 kids in this age group in their clinical trial, and there were no cases of COVID in the kids who got the vaccine and 18 in the placebo group, and the vaccinated kids had strong levels of antibodies. Side effects were basically what we've heard about for adults, you know, pain in the arm, headache, fatigue, maybe fever and chills, especially with that second dose. Dr. Megan Freeman from the University of Pittsburgh told me that pediatricians like her are delighted.
This is what we've been waiting for this whole time, is to have both data in kids about the safety and the efficacy of vaccination, and also to finally be able to get to this point where we have enough availability that kids have kind of moved up on the list.
It looks like the FDA is releasing a decision early next week, with recommendations also coming from a CDC advisory committee.
Scientists have said kids aren't at high risk of getting severely ill from COVID. So why should they get the vaccine then?
I mean, that's true. Most cases of coronavirus in children are mild or not even symptomatic. But tens of thousands of kids have been hospitalized from COVID and several hundred have died. And it's really hard to predict which child is going to be the one to get very sick or to get long-haul issues with breathing and headaches and fatigue. Kids under 18 also make up 22% of the population, and they can spread the virus. So getting them vaccinated is like blocking off a virus transmission route.
And surely one of the benefits of vaccinating kids is that their lives could start to go back to normal, which I know they all want very much.
Absolutely. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, head of the CDC, shared her 16-year-old son's plans for last night.
He is having two fully vaccinated friends over to watch a movie. It's been a long in coming, seemingly mundane, but now very luxurious event. And he can do so because he's fully vaccinated.
Teens have been missing out on a huge chunk of socialization this year. So getting vaccinated means they might not have to quarantine to play sports or wear masks at summer camp. It's going to help end this prolonged period of isolation for them.
So once the FDA gives the all clear, what happens next? I mean, how will the younger age group be able to get it?
Well, it's the same Pfizer vaccine that adults have been getting, you know, the same two doses spread out over 3 weeks. So teens will be able to get it in a lot of the same places adults go. Jeff Zients, President Biden's coronavirus coordinator, says as soon as the FDA gives the go-ahead, they're making a special push.
Over 15,000 local pharmacies will be ready to vaccinate 12 to 15-year-olds. And we are working to get more pediatricians and family doctors to offer vaccinations in their offices to make it as easy and convenient for adolescents to get vaccinated.
Biden is urging states to get at least one Pfizer shot to as many teens as possible by July 4th, and that will help ensure that they're fully vaccinated by the time they go back to school in the fall.
That's NPR's Ping Huang. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
And that's Up First for Saturday, May 8th. 2021. I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro. Up First is back Monday with news to start your week. Follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter.
And Lulu and I have more news, interviews, books, and music for you on the radio.
That's right. Weekend edition every Saturday and Sunday morning. Find your NPR station at stations.npr.org.
Today, it seems like everybody's got a bone to pick with the news. So it happens when somebody stops talking smack and just decides to wage all-out war.
First thing you do in an invasion, you eliminate the communications of the enemy.
And what happens if they win? Visit Stockton, California, for a story about a revolt against the mainstream media that's shaken up a city. From NPR's Invisibilia.